Here I go again.
I want to watch this film. It's just been sitting in my queue.
You don't have the time, but there is one thing I could do. Let me watch this film for you. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Duck.
I can't believe I haven't seen you since we recorded in July.
When was that?
I think we recorded our last ep in July it was after Costa Rica, Pura Vida.
Yeah. I think so, too. It's been a long-ass time.
What was the last episode?
I think it was Wild Things.
Yes. And when I say I haven't seen you, I mean I've seen you nearly daily. But
I haven't seen you with a microphone in your face.
I haven't seen you with holding a microphone
since
July.
That's also a lie. We did karaoke.
Oh, right.
So.
Ugh. Caught red-handed.
But welcome back to the podcast, everybody.
Oh, my God. It's so good to be back. I was, like, missing it a lot.
I know. Yeah, it's been a really long time. I hope we remember how to do it.
I know. I'm like, are there instructions somewhere?
Yeah. But to all our listeners, we apologize for the long delay. It's been a very busy summer. There's been travel. There's been jobs started. There's been sickness and health.
Two words. Life happens.
But we're back.
We're back.
And we're so excited.
Yeah, we missed you guys. And we're excited to hear your feedback on tonight's ep.
Okay. So I guess we should say, Duck,
what's in your queue?
What's in your queue?
Ah, yes. I forgot the formula of the show. So, actually, I just finished season one of Killing Eve.
Oh, what'd you think?
I loved it. No spoilies. Did not, like, love how the season finale ended.
Okay.
But I was highly entertained, and I think Jodie Comer is going to be a superstar one day.
Yeah.
I thought she was incredibly talented.
I also loved Sandra Oh in that. I haven't seen a lot of Sandra Oh stuff, so I don't really know her that well. But
yeah. Did you used to watch I never knew that everything was falling?
What, Grace?
Yeah, Grace.
Nah, I watched season one, I think, but that was like 25 years ago, so still
on. It was literally 25 years ago. Wait, is it still on?
I'm pretty sure it's still on. It's in season, I want to say 16 now.
Okay, because Nameless Produces, like, it's still in the air. I'm like, no fucking chance. Because I watched it in college.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Before college, I think. I've never been into medical dramas.
Everyone watched it when it first came
out. You're right. Okay, I shouldn't feel bad about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I...
Producer's indicating he did not.
He didn't. I thought he was telling us to stop talking about Grey's Anatomy. He goes, they're a really big sponsor of this podcast, you guys. Stop shitting on...
Do not talk,
stop shitting where we eat. And I was like, oh, God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It's still relevant, I guess.
It's very good program.
So, yeah, I guess I wasn't a huge Grey's fan, so I don't know Sandra Oh's work from that, but...
She was great.
She was great. You know what's weird is that I only started season two of Killing Eve. I watched season one. I loved it. Season two, I started. Couldn't really get into it. But Jodie Comer, I don't even think was nominated for an Emmy for season one, even though everyone was like, she should be nominated.
Yeah.
And then she was nominated and won for season two. And I think it was one of those things where they were like, she should have been nominated last year. So, like, let's let her win for this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though season two is not as good.
It's like when Leonardo won for The Revenant, I think, or something. Everyone's like, so... It wasn't that good, but, like, he's up, you know?
Yeah. They're like, it's been a long time coming, ever since Titanic.
Yeah, Titanic, baby. Jodie Comer, fabulous.
She's really good.
And I also found out she's only 26, and whenever I find out someone so talented is younger than me, I'm like, die! That's how I feel about that.
Okay.
So anyways, what's in your queue, ma'am?
So I watched, we were talking about, I just finished The Sinner season two. I finished.
What'd you think?
It was good. Carrie Coon is so good.
She's so good. Bill Pullman's good too. You don't like him?
I don't get him.
Oh, I get him, baby.
What's he in from before this?
Independence Day. Do-do-do-do-do.
Like Twister?
Oh,
or something?
While You Were Sleeping, he plays the brother of Sandy Cohen, who Sandra Bullock falls in love with.
Yeah, okay, wait. No, I thought that was Greg Kinnear in While You Were Sleeping.
No, okay. You must be mistaken.
I guess so. Okay, so that I can see. I'm just like, I feel like he's resting on his laurels. I don't know if I'm using that term correctly, but
Bill Pullman, and we'll find out.
I feel like his acting style is like very like, I just showed up here, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I don't get it in the role he's in The Sinner, when he's like a detective. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, I don't buy it. And I think like if I were a longtime follower of Bill Pullman, I might be like, okay, yeah, this is Bill Pullman as a detective. I get it. But I'm sort of like, what? I don't understand.
Oh, I got it. I thought he was like really subtle. And like, I thought he had a pretty nuanced performance.
Okay.
Oh, what?
I will say I liked him better in season two than season one. But I think that's because season two, it was like him matching Carrie Coon the whole time. And she's like really awesome. So...
Yes, like he like leveled up for sure, I feel like, to like match Carrie Coon.
Like Jessica Biel.
Yeah, he's like
she's fine.
She's like seventh heaven. And he's when like, I can work with this.
Happy faces smiling around the bend. And then Happy at the end goes woof woof.
I like literally haven't seen her in anything since seventh heaven.
Yeah, except for like being married to Justin Timberlake.
Yeah,
that's
I'm like, has she done any other work aside from her wedding?
Aside from her wedding to JT, all of the scenes in the first season, I kept being like, she's married to Justin Timberlake. Like,
I know.
What do you think he thought of this? You know?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, was he okay with
it? He was probably like, this is a little dark for me, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know. I'm like, he'd be spooked by that. He's like, I prefer trolls. But also, did you know? Okay, I'm a JT bitch myself.
Yeah.
I mean, we all are. He's the white Will Smith. But did you know he's an anti-vaxxer?
Oh, God, no.
No offense
really?
To our anti-vaxxer listeners.
I don't know if I believe that. Is Jessica Biel?
I can only imagine. But also, my cousin told me this. So, no, if that's how valid that is of a source.
I feel like social media would have told me this already.
I would have thought, too, that, like, TMZ would have been like, can you believe? You know, like, in all our faces and our Facebooks. But, yeah, I hadn't heard boo until my cousin... text me, Justin Timberlake's an anti-vaxxer. Call the police.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Okay, well.
Time for the film.
Please tell me what movie you watched.
Wait, do you know what I watched?
No, I have no idea. Literally,
oh my God.
No idea.
I was really nervous that you were going to know because I watched it on your Amazon Prime. And I know it would show up as like, continue watching. For Sarah.
I haven't looked at it yet.
Okay, so this crazy fucking movie... is featuring, I'm going to give you the cast list first.
Okay.
You got B Coops. This is officially a Bradley Cooper podcast.
Okay.
You got B Coops. Oh, we have another repeat celebrity, Jeremy Irons, as featured in Beautiful Creatures.
Okay.
Episode 2 of Let Me Watch This Film For You. Check it out, everyone.
Okay. B Coop, Jeremy Irons. Okay.
B Coop, Jeremy Irons, Zoe Saldana.
Okay.
Of Avatar fame.
Yeah.
And center stage, thank you. J.K. Simmons. And Dennis Quaid. And featuring Dennis Quaid.
It's not the movie where he is like, I'm only using 10% of my brain, is it?
No, Limitless. I think we watched that.
Because I've seen that. I was like, don't
we rented that at Redbox together.
Okay.
It is not the limit. It's not Limitless.
I don't know what it is. Tell me.
Okay. I really hope you haven't seen it, but I'm sure you would have told
now
me.
Now I would
had.
Know by now. Yeah.
The words.
I've seen that. Okay. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it, but I've seen that.
Oh, thank God.
I have seen the preview.
Okay. If you've like seen that and not mentioned
the
it,
the promo
to me,
image.
The you've seen the thumbnail. Okay. Oh my God. It's insane.
Really?
Yes. Oh my God. I couldn't believe. So I actually watched this back in August, like in earnest. I was like, oh, this looks like a good movie, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
And I've been burned before by Bradley Cooper. See, aloha. But Oh my God. I'm like,
have we ever done a non-Bradley Cooper movie?
I know. I'm like, I don't remember any that we've done that didn't have Bradley Cooper in them. Bradley Cooper just like humiliating himself.
Yeah.
I'm like, he must just not say no to anything. I don't know. So actually, he was the executive producer on this too, as he was on Aloha.
Okay.
So he had a financial stake. But all right, I guess.
The words.
I think I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, tell me.
2012.
Okay, 2012.
Featuring. Oh, wait, I already told you everyone it's featuring. Okay. So we open up on a beautiful office, and it has the spine of a book that says the words. That okay. is the title of the book.
Okay.
Zenith Quaid like picks up the book, gently leafs through it, takes it under his arm, and walks out of the hotel room or wherever he is to an auditorium.
It's in the office. Okay.
Office. Yeah, sorry. Walks out of the office to an auditorium.
Okay, gotcha.
He gets behind a podium, lights go up, the crowd erupts in applause.
Okay.
He is a highly successful novelist.
Okay.
Which, when you like hear any of his like prose, you're like, what? You got famous for writing? Like,
hey, 50 Shades of Grey happened.
That's true.
There is no, I no longer believe that there's a, you know, threshold there.
He is described as the darling of the New York literary scene.
Oh, which, God. Dennis Quaid.
Okay, I know. Dennis fucking Quaid. So he, like, the lights come up, and he's so smug. Like, he's just like, I'm amazing. And he.
I can see it.
He goes.
He's like.
Yeah, he's literally, like, got, like.
Like, smiling with his lips closed the whole
time. Smiling with his lips closed, just, like, nodding his head, being like, that's right, motherfuckers. It's me, Dennis Quaid. Okay, so he opens the book and he goes, the words by me. Everybody laughs. It's hilarious. So everybody's cracking up and then silence. He starts doing a reading.
Okay.
For, you know, whoever this audience is. The reading, oh my God, like the writing is just awful. Like the first line of the book is like, the old man stood in the rain.
Jesus.
He watched the young couple exit the building as if the rain couldn't touch them. And so then from there, Dennis Quaid starts reading and then it cuts to the story that he's telling. So we're actually watching like the story that okay. Dennis Quaid is reading. So he's narrating it. But now we've cut to this different time where we're watching the young couple in the book.
Gotcha.
The young couple in the book is played by Bradley Cooper and Zoe Saldana.
Got it.
So old man, we can't really make out, standing in the rain, watches them get into a limousine. In the limo, Zoe's like, are you nervous? To Bradley. And he's like, oh, I don't know. This feels like a big deal. I never wanted it to turn into something. It was just supposed to be a little book. And she's like, oh, honey, you're always too modest. They are going to a literary award ceremony.
So meta.
Meta. Where Bradley Cooper is being honored as like the writer of the year. I don't know. You know, like best writer ever is the award that he was winning. And so they.
Best writer, I guess.
I guess that's what he won. So he goes to the award ceremony and they're like, and the best writer ever goes to Bradley Cooper. And he, like, stands up, goes to the podium. He's like, thank you, everyone. It's really not that big of a deal. I never thought that was going to make it. I guess I'm happy to be here. Thanks. Goodbye. Like, so modest.
Yeah.
He does not own any of his fame.
Yeah, he's not Dennis Quaid.
He's no Dennis Quaid. So then we cut to Dennis Quaid is now talking about their initial like meeting, like him meeting Zoe Saldana. So okay. This was supposed to be like in the future. They play with chronology here in an attempt to like make the plot seem more complex.
Okay.
So basically that was like supposed to be like 10 years in the future. Now we cut back like 10 years in the past. Bradley and Zoe have just graduated college.
Okay.
They're moving in together in a loft in Brooklyn. It's, of course, enormous.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be broke. Yeah. And and they, like, make Bradley look very young. He's wearing, like, a backwards hat and, like, cut-off shorts. And he's like, I'm a little boy. And they are, like, moving in and they, like, throw their mattress on the floor. And they're like, we have nothing, but we're so happy because we're in love.
Yeah.
And so Dennis Quaid is narrating this, and he's like, they had nothing but each other, and it was all they needed. And you're like, okay, I get it. And Bradley, at this time, is a struggling author.
Right.
Of course, you know, this is 10 years before he won his big prize. So he's a struggling author, and he's writing. We see him, like, getting rejection letter after rejection letter.
Of course.
He then has to go ask his daddy for money, and his daddy is J.K. Simmons. And J.K. Simmons from Whiplash.
Yeah, I know who J.K. Simmons is, but I was just like, he's not that much older than Bradley Cooper, I feel like.
Bradley Cooper as a young buck, maybe, with a backwards hat on.
If you put a backwards hat on him,
he looks
10 years younger.
It was nothing. So he goes into J.K. Simmons, like company that he owns, basically.
Of course, yeah.
He owns his own company. And
can I say, like, in movies, everyone's dad is always rich. That's like such a common thing.
Everyone has a rich daddy.
They're like, I don't want to ask my rich dad, but I guess I will. I have to.
I know.
I'm like, oh, boo hoo.
Yeah, they're like, I really want to make it on my own, but I guess I can ask my dad. It's like, yeah, do it. So like, suck up your pride, Bradley. So he goes to J.K. Simmons at, like, the company J.K. owns, and he's like, I don't want to be doing this, but I do need to ask you for a little bit of money. And JK's like, no way, bro. I've been floating you for so long.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing more harm than help. Like, you got to make it on your own 2 feet. And Bradley is like, fine, and storms out. And JK's like, get back in here, son. I'm not going to leave you high and dry.
Really?
And so he does cut him a check. And but Bradley's like, you don't understand. It's not like your line of work. You know, being an author, I don't just get paid for the work that I do. I got to find somebody, you know, to buy it. So he is trying to make the case. But it's also like, just get a day job.
Yeah.
So
also, you, like, to be a good author, you need, like, life experience. You can't
no one wants to read, like, literally, like, a college
rich 22-year-old college graduate, like, ask my dad for money. Like, that's going to be the dumbest story ever.
Yes, and at one point someone asked him, like, so what do you write about? And he goes, angry young man. I'm like, okay, that's enough. But he's not, like, angry at any point. But so anyways,
okay.
JK cuts him the check.
Great.
And but he's like, but you got to get a job too. So Bradley does get a job at an agency, like a literary agency, doing, like, like, kind of bullshit work. But, like, yeah, you got to start fucking somewhere, bitch.
Got to pay the bills.
You've got to pay the bills. And, like, what a great, like, job. What a great in that you got. Like,
yeah,
you could be working at McDonald's flipping boigas. So
I go, yeah.
Yeah, you could. So he's working at this literary agency, blah, blah, blah. You know, times are tough, but he makes do. He and Zoe are so very in love. He's trying to write. And again, like, the books just aren't really working. But the good thing is he and Zoe have a very passionate, beautiful love for each other.
Okay.
And as Dennis Quaid narrates about the couple, and he's like, and on a Friday afternoon, they got married at City Hall. And I should mention, is stunning in this.
Yeah, like, she's very beautiful.
Oh, my God. She's so beautiful. And I thought she was pretty good in this, too, you know, regardless of the script that she was given to work with. She does all right. And, yeah, she just is so effortless, so graceful. So they get married at City Hall, and they go to Paris for their honeymoon.
Okay.
In Paris, they're having a gay old time. They visit, like, Ernest Hemingway's Grave, I think it is.
Okay.
But they see some like Hemingway stuff.
Yeah.
And you just see them looking at it being like, beautiful. Like, I respect him because he too was a writer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're just like Paris montage. They're like, Eiffel Tower shopping. And Zoe Saldana buys him this like briefcase. And she's like, this is perfect for you to put like your manuscripts in.
He's great.
Like, I love it, hon. So
I'm going to be honest. I love it.
I'll be honest with you. I fucking love it. So they go home and he's still working on that novel, you know, yeah. But it just isn't quite working. So one day he's packing up his stuff to try and, you know, sell some more manuscripts to the agents at his literary agency. And he's going through the briefcase that Zoe gave him. He finds a little something in there. He pulls out a manuscript that is, you know, kind of looks like it's been dipped in coffee and they burned the edges of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you like would make a treasure map as a child, like it is dated.
Yeah.
We can tell that this is not from the present day. So,
right.
So he finds this ancient...
The font is very outdated.
The font is very swirly and curly. So he finds this dated manuscript, and he's like, what do we have here? So he starts looking through it. He cannot put it down.
Wow.
He is totally swept up in this novel.
Okay.
We see just page after page of like... coffee stained, you know, pages like flying through, and we see like a few words on the pages of like love, death, beauty. And we're like, okay, we have no idea what this story is about, but a single tear rolls down Bradley's cheek he's reading it. And he's like, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. So then, he and Zoe like go to bed, that night. He wakes up in a fever dream. And he's like, I can't sleep. The words were so powerful. And so he then goes to his laptop, like grabs the manuscript, and he's like, I just need to type it. So he types out the whole.
You're playing with fire, buddy.
Flipper, slow, Bradley. So he types
plagiarism.
Out, he types out the whole manuscript. Doesn't even take a break. He does it throughout the whole night. And
must not be that long.
I know. I guess it was a novella. But so he spends the whole night typing it out. And finally he's like, oh, I'm so relieved I like got that. I had to get those words through my fingertips, you know, like it was like catharsis
so
for him.
Lame. Yeah.
I know, it's so dumb. And then so then he's like just going about life at my stupid literary agency. He like presents one of his books and like again is just like they're like, it's just bad. Like everyone's like rejecting him.
Like, the thing is, you're just not good at writing.
Yeah, they're like, so you should probably quit. and then he comes home from work. Zoe Saldana runs up to him and is hugging him and starts crying. And he's like, what's wrong, baby? What's happening? And she's like, I can't believe it. I've never done this before. I need you to know I don't go through your stuff. But I went to use your laptop and your book was open on the screen and I read the whole thing. I couldn't put it down. I finished the entire thing. Apparently it was very short because everyone's reading it in like a minute. And she's like, it was the most beautiful thing I've ever read in my life. And it's so much better than anything else you've ever written. And I feel like I've learned so much more about you. Like you're finally like coming into your potential and you're finally like living up to what you could be. All your other books were nothing in comparison. Yeah. And she's just like twisting the knife of being like, everything before this was god awful. And he's like, wait, no, hon, that was private. And like, you know, he's like, I don't want to say, but and she's like, what is it, baby? Why have you been keeping this from me? It's amazing. And he's like, you really think it's that good? And she's like, oh, honey, if you don't take this to your agent, I'm taking it.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, I don't want to lose my hot wife, so I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Next day, he brings in the manuscript, presents it to one of the agents, and the agent is like, have you shown this to anyone else? Just my wife. This is gold. Do not show this to anyone else. I'm signing you right now. I'm giving you an advance. Here's $1 million. This is freaking genius work, baby. Where has this been all this time?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Bradley is, needless to say, quite happy, yet conflicted because he completely plagiarized someone else's work. So yeah, so then he's like, where in the money? And he's feeling good about that. At this point, it cuts back to Dennis Quaid telling this story. I kind of forgot he was even there. But it cuts back to him in the auditorium.
Also, and he's reading a lot of his book aloud.
Yeah, he reads like 90% of books. Because apparently books in whatever time period this is are like 3 pages long. Yeah. Like literally all books are so short.
Not that long. I'm like, I guess, yeah, it's pretty easy to
he's
read them.
He's literally like reading his entire book to this audience. So, and it looks so thick too. Yeah. So then cuts to Dennis Quaid and he's like, and that's the end of part one, and like closes the book. And he's like, thank you, everyone. And then he like goes out to like the meet and greet behind the scenes.
Okay.
You know, it's intermission. And he is just kind of bopping around. People are like, can I sign? Would you sign my book? And he's like, yeah, yeah, I got 2 seconds. Like he's like pretty like curt with them.
Yeah.
And then a woman follows him and is like, excuse me, Dennis Quaid, I've heard you've based a lot of your work on reality. And he's like, the great thing about being an artist is I don't have to answer questions. I just let my work ask the questions. Some like random, like very yeah. oblique. Yeah. And then comes out Olivia Wilde. Did I mention that she's in this?
No, okay.
Sorry. So then appears Miss Olivia Wilde. And we've actually like seen the camera pan to her in the audience. And she's basically like masturbating in the audience. She's like, I love Dennis Quaid. And like, yeah, her eyes
Olivia
are just like,
Wilde is the one that's married to Jason Sudeikis.
Jason Sudeikis, yeah.
And she directed Booksmart. Okay.
Yes. Thank you. So she, whole time she's been watching him like super intently yeah. and being like, oh my God. So we know, you know, there's something going on
she's
there.
She's a fangirl, yeah.
Yeah, she's a big fangirl. So then she appears and she has 2 glasses of red wine and she hands one to him and she goes, I've read that you enjoy like a 1942 Bordeaux or something like that.
Ugh, yeah.
And he's like, and where did you read that, young lady? And she's like significantly younger than him.
Yeah.
And of course. And so then he takes the glass and like sips and is like, delicious. Why don't you come back to my study and we can chat a little bit more? So the manager of like, or the producer of the show is like, 20 minutes, Dennis. No time for foreplay, LOL. And so he and Olivia go to like the office where we originally saw him. And they're just like sipping wine and flirting their balls off.
Yeah.
Like the, you could cut the sexual tension with a knife.
Damn.
But basically she like explains like, I'm a huge fangirl and I've been obsessed with you since this year and I'm in grad school right now and I'm writing my dissertation all about you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And she's dressed terribly. It's like 2012 dress. Like she's like belted her dress and it's yeah. like baggy and it's kind of like she's got like ugly tights. Yeah, the whole thing is just not great. She has like a braid. Yeah. So, but she still looks beautiful. So then she's telling him like how obsessed with him she is. And he's like, so what do you know about me? And she's like, I know everything. I know that you love pickles. I know that, you know, like dumb shit like that. And he's like, where'd you find it out? And she's like, I read it in GQ, LOL. And then and he's like, I really need to start reading my own interviews. And then she's like, and I know that you met your wife in college. And he's like, did you know that I'm separated from my wife? And she's like, I did, but you're wearing your wedding ring. And he's like, I'm trying to keep up appearances. So she has come there to flirt, okay. if not more. So, yeah, they're flirting big time and, you know, lots of sexual tension there. Then intermission's over. He's like, I need to get back to the stage.
Yeah. And to my first love, the stage.
And that is a good time for a break.
Oh my God. So weird.
So bad. Release your inhibitions. Feel the rain on your skin. Put yourself in words unspoken. Live your life with arms wide open. Today is where your book begins.
we actually do have an ad this week. So this is a belated birthday message for our dear friend, Kristen.
1 month belated.
Kristen Knox Knee Kane.
Knee Kane.
Kristen, we're so sorry we didn't get this to you by B-Day time, but happy birthday nonetheless.
Oh my God, we're so sorry, Kristen. We love you so much.
We love you, and we wish you could be right here with us right now.
We really do.
What? Okay, so here's a little original song just for you.
Just for you.
A 5, 6, 7, 8.
Dear Kristen, you are a beautiful woman. Has anyone ever told you? You deserve the world. And life. Life will give you everything. You. Sorry. You. You will be the most successful and beautiful and lovely and charming and tall woman there ever was. Happy birthday, Kristen.
Happy birthday.
Feel the rain on your skin. No one else can feel it for you. Only you can let it in. No one else. No one else can see the world.
So, Beatty, would you like to do a very brief recap of the film so far?
Yes. So we are watching The Words, or listening to The Words. Mm-mm. You watched it. Dennis Quaid is reading aloud from his book, and in his book is the story of Bradley Cooper and Zoe Saldana, who are a couple. Bradley Cooper finds a manuscript, passes it off as his own. Plagiarism is real. And then also Dennis Quaid at his book reading has met Olivia Wilde, who is flirting with him.
Yar.
And I think that's everything.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
I had to like stifle my laughter during that because I'm like, what is this movie? Okay. Then Dennis Quaid is on stage and he goes, part two. Then he met the old man. So as you'll recall from the beginning of the film, there was an old man at the beginning of the book watching Bradley Cooper experience his beautiful life.
Yes.
So we see the old man in his shitty little apartment in New York, going to the cabinet, taking out pills. He's got a lot of pills in there, so we know something's wrong with him. But then we see him follow Bradley Cooper on a bus to Central Park.
Okay.
So Bradley gets to Central Park, sets up on a bench, and is just having a read, as any famous author would do. You know, at this point, he's incredibly famous. And
so we're back in the time zone, or the time period, when Bradley has just won Best Writer Ever Award.
Yes. So now cutting to, we're at that stage.
Okay. Still taking a bus. Interesting.
But still taking a bus because I think he's a man of the people.
Okay, sure.
So he's in Central Park just reading, you know, enjoying a beautiful fall day when an elderly man played by Jeremy Irons comes and sits down next to him. Now, Jeremy Irons looks like shit. He's wearing like a giant trench coat and he has like a bowler hat on and he's like scraggly as fuck. Okay. Yeah,
That looks kind of cool until,
He's very scraggly.
Yeah.
He's disheveled. Like, he just looks like he's seen some hard times.
Sure.
As
well as pill.
Very sallow, pale, looks sickly. So, it looks disgusting, frankly. So, then Jeremy Irons starts chatting up Bradley Keeps.
Yeah.
And he's like, so, I hate to do this to you, but I read your book, and I must say I loved it. And Cooper's, like, a little curt with him. I'm like, yeah, thanks. I know. Like, I'm the most famous man alive, so just fuck off. And he's like, I thought it was really fabulous. Would you humor me? Like, I've got a little story myself. And Bradley Cooper's like, no, I need to get going. Packs up his things, starts walking, and he's like, are you sure? I think you'd want to hear it. And Bradley's like, no, thanks, man. I'm good. And he goes, it's about a man who wrote a book and the pissant kid who stole it from him.
Oh.
I was like, damn. Bow, yeah. Bow, bow, bow. So,
I mean, they could have seen that coming.
Yar, yar. So, then Bradley turns in his tracks and is like, say what? And he's like, no, I'm listening. And Jeremy Irons is like, take a seat, bitch, basically. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, he's like, we got a lot of talking to do. So Jeremy Irons is like, I'm going to tell you the whole story and you're going to sit and listen. So this is when we actually learn what the book, The Window Tears, which is the name of Bradley Cooper's book. God, oh, yeah. Did I not mention that? So the book is called The Window Tears, which I'm like, what does that even mean?
I hate it.
So
The Window Tears.
Yeah. So then we cut to Jeremy Irons. Oh, my God. There's more famous people in this. I forgot. Jeremy Irons describing like the truth behind like the novel that he wrote. So he's like, I was a young man in the 1940s and I got drafted for World War II. I can't remember if there was a draft. Maybe he enlisted. And he's like, I went and I was stationed in Paris. Wow, I'd never been anywhere like it in my life. I was a young boy and I had the whole world ahead of me. And so he's like, we cut to Jeremy Irons as like a 19-year-old in Paris, played by Benjamin Bonds.
I don't know who that is.
He is in Westworld and he played Logan. He's also Prince Caspian in the Chronicles of Narnia. You'll probably recognize him when you look him up. He's very hot.
Okay, cool.
Very hot, but also kind of looks like a wax model all of it. But I actually thought he acted decently given the circumstances. So, yeah, I would say look him up. He looks great when he's wearing 1940s like military clothes too.
Cool.
So,
something to look forward to later.
Yeah, something to check out tonight, ladies. So he is, yeah, basically like a young buck in Paris, like, you know, doing World War II stuff. The whole thing is like in sepia tone.
Yeah.
Because it's like, now we're in the past. Exactly what I was picturing. Yeah. It's like so over the top. It's like, now we're in the past.
They're like, did you know in the past we only had two colors?
Yeah. Literally. It's like
brown and white.
Brown and white. But there's like pops of color. It looks like the colorized version of The Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Basically. I'm like, okay, whatever. So, yeah, he's like in Paris. We see him like see a dead body and he's like, that was a scarring experience for me. And then he is at a cafe. And he's like, saw the waitress. Oh, there was a French waitress there that's like, get out of here, you American pigs, basically. Yeah. I'm like, they're protecting you, LOL.
I'm like, wait, World War II? That, yeah. I think they'd be fine with them.
I know, right? But she was like, these stupid soldiers. So she like kind of brushes them off. And then he makes eye contact with her. She is stunningly gorgeous.
Okay.
I do not remember who plays her, but a famous French actress. So she's absolutely beautiful. She gives him a second look and see he's pretty cute too. Then his friend is like, if you don't ask her out, I will. And so he chases her into the cafe and is like, be my girlfriend. but turns out neither of them speak each other's language. So Jeremy Irons narrating it is like, he only knew one word of French. And he goes, oui. And then he goes, and she only knew one word of English. And she goes, yes. So he goes, it was the perfect relationship. LOL. So then we get a montage of like love in Paris. Yeah. I'm having so much fun in World War II and like doing their thing. Ice cream in the face, you know, that kind of stuff.
Just like crepes.
Yeah, just slapping each other with crepes. So there's a lot of that crepe action.
They go like beret shopping.
Yeah. Yes, they go beret shopping. They're under the Eiffel Tower like the entire time. Nobody lives anywhere else. And so then the war is over and he gets discharged to go home. And he's like, I knew what I had to do. He gets the job in Paris.
Okay.
He goes, I got an apprenticeship as a writer. I'm like, that's not a thing. So he got an apprenticeship as a writer. And he's like, they would hire anyone who could string a few sentences together. I'm like, okay, yeah. And so he's...
Yeah, like everyone was really like rich after World War II, like dying for American writers.
Yes.
Who could write two sentences.
Made no sense. Okay, so he's like working as an apprentice to a writer, LOL. And then they are having a beautiful life being like poor in Paris. And, you know, it's the young, they're in love, they're having a blast. They get married at, I don't know, church, whatever. Don't ask me. Like, so they I didn't want to know. They get married and they're happy as clams. I tell you what. He is now fluent in French, which I'm like, ay, 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 pura vida. Like Benjamin Barnes is looking good parlaying français.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're like chatting in French. They chat in English. She speaks English now.
Right. Of course.
And they're having a great fucking time. They live in this like garden apartment. It's a total shithole, but life is beautiful.
Yeah.
Roberto Bonini. So life is beautiful. They then get pregnant with a child.
Okay.
They're so happy. Jeremy Irons is like, he didn't know it then, but this was the time of his life. And Benjamin Barnes is like cuddling with the baby and like, you know, just loving being a daddy. Then things take a turn for the worse. I know. I'm sorry to say it, but the baby falls ill.
No.
I know. It's like the last person I wanted to die in this movie. I'm like, anyone else would be fine. The baby gets very
like
sick.
Everyone's dead and the baby's alive. And it's just like, well, somebody's got to take care.
I'm like, that would have been a better movie. So then the baby dies, unfortunately. I know, sad. It's very sad. I like actually welled up with tears, but I'm like, no, Doc, don't fall for it. So she, of course, like has like a breakdown.
Yeah.
She is completely like catatonic, essentially. Like she's, you know, makes complete sense. Yeah. So he gets frustrated because he's like caretaking for her and he's like making all their meals and doing everything while she's just kind of like, you know, at home, like, you know, it happens. And so he's making all her meals and then he gets a little frustrated and he storms out of the house and he's like, I can't do this anymore, because now he's like French and American. And he goes and gets drunk and he's like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, like getting wasted. He comes home finally in a better mood. She's gone. She's left a note that's like, I had to go to my mother in the countryside. I need like, I need a break. I need a change of scenery. Like,
yeah.
Totally makes sense again.
Yes.
So, yeah, fine, normal. So he is devastated that she has left him because now he's like, now I'm totally alone and I'm depressed. I'm grieving. In his fit of grief and rage, he spends the next, like, week writing the manuscript of his life. He cranks out what will future be known as the window tears. So he like cranks out the window tears and then he goes to visit his wife on the countryside and is like, look what I wrote. And she reads it and she's like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. This is amazing. I'm ready to get back together.
Great.
So he's like, okay, great. Like, you know, take some time to pack up your stuff. I got to go back to work. Meet me back in Paris. She takes the train back to Paris. And we see that she leaves the briefcase with his manuscript on the train. Boom, off it goes. She comes home and he's like, hey, babe, I'm so happy you're back. We can start our life together again. Where's that manuscript so I can send it in and get money for it?
Yeah.
And she's like, I swear it was right here or something. And she's like looking around.
Oh, no.
I left it on the train. He loses his shit. He's like, that was my everything. And their relationship crumbles and they divorce. Yes.
Okay.
Or if she leaves him, I don't know if they formally divorce, but she's gone. He comes back to America, never is able to write again, turns into Jeremy Irons.
Turns into Jeremy Irons.
So things didn't go so hot for him.
Okay.
Until one day he is in a bookshop. And he sees a little book called The Window Tears, peeks into it.
So Bradley Cooper didn't even bother to change the title.
I don't know what the original title was.
Oh, okay.
But he
looks through it. Because I would like change the title just so the person that couldn't figure it out that easily, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it's like the most popular book in America right now. So Jeremy Irons was probably going to read it. So even if he did change the title. So he starts reading it and he's like, that motherfucker, this is my book.
Yeah.
And that's where we are right now.
Okay.
And Bradley Cooper's like, oh my God, dude, this is a misunderstanding. And he's like, no, it's not. And he's like, okay, you're right, it's not.
Yeah.
He like caves immediately. I'm like, why'd you even try? And Bradley's like, wait, I can make it up to you. And he's like, nope, I don't want anything. I just want you to know, you know, that was my book. That was my life. And, you know, you stole it from me. So then Jeremy Irons like huffs off. Bradley gets rip-roaring drunk.
Okay.
He's like, fuck, I'm screwed. He gets wasted. And he's just like, doo-doo-doo, roaming around New York City. He comes home like in the wee hours of the night to Zoe Saldana. And she's like, baby, where have you been? Are you drunk? And he's like, as I'm going to tell you. And she's like, what is it, hon? What's happening? This is really weird. He's like, I didn't do it. I didn't write a book. It's not mine. And he's just like trying. And she's like, I don't understand anything that you're saying. Like, enunciate. Like, and he's like, I didn't write the book. I saw it, plagiarized. And like making no, she's like completely incoherent. And she's like, I am so confused. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, why do you love me? You only love me because of my book. And she's like, no, I love you because all these other reasons. He's like, well, I didn't write the book. And she's like, am I really supposed to believe this? Okay, I need to leave. Like, I need time away from you.
Yeah.
So she leaves. And then the next day he sobers up and he goes in to tell his book agent, look, I didn't write it.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, my name is on this. Like, yeah, we're all gonna go down. You're not saying anything to anyone about this. And Bradley's like, what do you mean? I need to make this right. And he's like, no, you know, we are not going down for this.
Yeah.
You can pay that guy off, but we're not putting his name on this. We're not letting anyone know this is a huge scandal and you will never work in this town again.
Yeah. But we will keep paying you for the copies of the book.
Yeah, for the many royalties you're owed. And so then we cut to Quaid, Dennis Quaid, right, reading again. Once again, I forgot that this was a book within a book within a book. So Dennis Quaid.
I'm having trouble keeping the layers.
I know. Sweet. It's so complex, this movie. So then Quaid is like finishing reading that section. And then he closes the book and he's like, the end of part two. And if you want to know the rest, you want to know how it ends? Buy the book, bitches. Like,
yeah, we all already bought it. We're at your book
signing.
Yeah,
we're at the signing.
And we're huge fans.
And so we're huge fans. We're definitely going to buy the book. We wish you hadn't read so much of it to us. Like, that's literally like, there's like 10 pages left. So, yeah, I'm
he
sure.
He read 20 out of the 30 pages of the 30, whole book. Of the
whole book. Books are so short. So, like, he's like, buy the book, bitches. And then we cut to people are asking him questions about it in the, you know, backstage area or in the after reading thing, reception. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. And then we see Olivia Wilde like posed and she's like,
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yes. So it's he's on. Like, excuse me, I need to go see Olivia Wilde about something. So then they go back to his hotel room.
Yeah.
And she is like, I have to know how the book ends. And he's like,
read the last 10 pages.
Yeah. He's like, it'll take you about 10 minutes. And so he's like, I can't say. And she's like, no, tell me. I need
just
to know.
Just buy the book.
I know. And so basically she's like on top of him at this stage and there's so much sexual tension and it's gross. 'Cause he's like, creepy. He's like old in this. It's like not cute. So it's not like sexy Professor Quaid. It's like, So she's like, you've got to tell me. And he's like, all right, fine. I'll finish the book for you. Then we go back into the book. We're back into Bradley Cooper's story.
Yeah.
And Bradley Cooper somehow locates Jeremy Irons where he lives in the greenhouse that he works at.
Okay.
And the greenhouse. So he goes to find him at the greenhouse and he's like, I'm here to make things right. And Jeremy Irons is like, I don't want you here. Like, stay out of my life. I just wanted you to know that, like, you stole my life's work. And, like, you got famous for that. And that's fine. That's just the way that things happen. I don't want anything from you. And Bradley's like, let me give you this check. Let me give you this. I want to put your name on the book. He's like, I don't want my name on the book. Like, screw that.
Yeah.
Like, you stole this and you have to live with it, basically. And so Jeremy Irons kind of like runs him out of there.
Okay.
And Bradley Cooper goes back to the agent and says like, all right, man, screw it. We're not going to tell anyone. We're just going to hold on to it. Pretend this never happened. A couple weeks later, Jeremy Irons dies. At that stage, Bradley Cooper takes the manuscript to his grave, places it in his tomb to be sealed forevermore. So he buries the secrets.
Okay.
Then we have cut back to Dennis Quaid and Olivia Wilde. And he's like, yeah. And so Bradley Cooper just lived with it. And she's like, bullshit. And he's like, what do you mean? That's how the book ends. Bullshit. People need to sleep at night. There's no way that he'd be able to live with that kind of guilt. And he's like, I'm telling you, that's the way it end. And then Quaid gives a crazy, like, soliloquy to Olivia Wilde, where he's like, you don't understand. There is a difference between life and fiction. It's so close. They are so close, but they are not touching. And it, like, makes – it's, like, supposed to be, like, this, like, thinly veiled metaphor for whatever, but it made no sense whatsoever. He's like, but they never actually touch.
I hate it so much.
It's trying so hard. It's just, like, this, like, inflated, like, very, like – it's taking itself so seriously.
Someone
and trying
read, like,
to be...
Intro to Literary Theory. Yes. And they were like, there's a difference between fiction and real life. Oh, yeah. My God.
It's trying to be so intellectual, and it's...
It's not. Yeah.
It's just makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's like nothing about it is, like, impactful. So then he's like, she storms out. Like, she goes to storm out, and she's like, I can't believe this. And then he, like, kind of pins her against the wall. And he goes, so which is it, life or fiction? And then she drops her coat and starts making out with him, like, very, like, ravenously. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm like, why was she into that? He was, like, yelling at her. And then, yeah, so basically they're, like, making out now. And then he pulls away and he's like, I can't do this. And he goes and, like, sits down. And he's like, I can't do this. And she's like, what is it? Why? And he's like, I can't say. And she's like, you never let go of her, did you? And he's like, I never did. And then we cut to Bradley and Zoe, like, laying in bed together. And it's Zoe being like, it's going to be okay. Like, we'll get through this. Like, even though you plagiarized everything and, like, this was a sham, like, we're going to get through this. And Bradley's like, yes, we will. That's the end of the movie.
What?
I know. It made no sense.
Wait.
So we are led to believe that the book is obviously about Dennis Quaid's life.
Right.
And... you know, he did this for one of his books. Like, he plagiarized someone, and then he and his wife ended up splitting because of this. But that he's, like, accepted his mistakes, and this is his way of kind of, like, owning his truth.
But I don't understand how, if Zoe Saldana was like, I'm okay with this, we're going to be fine, we're going to stay together, then why is the end... Also,
I think that's how he wanted the book to end. But in reality, they split. He, like, wishes they'd stayed together. Okay. The book ends with them staying together because it's fiction. There's a difference, people, between life and fiction.
Yeah.
And so he's like, in this fictional version, I would have stayed with my wife, but she couldn't handle like the
weight of it.
So she actually left me. But everything else is true, apparently.
Okay. So stupid. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Wait, before we even get into, like, unpacking this craziness, there's one thing scene I forgot to mention that is important to me to share with you. And it is, like, basically, like, when Bradley's going through all his trials of, like, not being able to make it as a writer and he had to borrow money from his dad, blah, blah, blah. They, like, go out for dinner one night and they get in a huge fight. And
him and his dad or him and Zoe?
Sorry, he and Zoe.
Okay.
And Zoe's had, like, a successful career and we never learn what she does because nobody cares about what she does. And so, but she's, like, been successful in her career. And Bradley, like, lays into her and he's like, everything has just fallen into place for you. You got everything just worked out just great. And I've had to slave my ass off. And literally, I'm like, is this actually happening? Like,
it's him. A rich white man. Yeah,
it's like him yelling at his black wife about how he has no opportunities. I'm like, what is happening? How is this movie have... It's like so tone deaf.
Yeah, that's really messed up.
So I just wanted to mention this. Okay. Anyways, cut to... What'd you think, Sarah?
I don't know. Like, it's... I don't really enjoy things when it's like a thing within a thing, like a movie within a movie.
You don't like meta.
I don't really like meta stuff. So that was like bothering me the whole time because I just had to continually be like, whose story am I in? I don't get it. And then, yeah, it doesn't make sense because like if Dennis Quaid is Bradley Cooper, then how is he a famous author? Because Bradley Cooper actually sucked at writing. So the only book that would ever be famous is the book that came out that he plagiarized. So how did Dennis Quaid get to be a famous author if his only book is about him plagiarizing?
Yeah, good question.
I don't understand. That's
a really good question. But they do point out that Bradley Cooper was, after like getting his initial success by plagiarizing, he was able to get subsequent books published because of his like notoriety. So he like used that plagiarism as his launching point, and then he wrote his own books after that, but they were like never as good.
I don't like Dennis Quaid, but I don't have like strong feelings.
If you saw this, you would not like him. He looks like he's had a lot of plastic surgery.
What did this film teach us about the human condition?
Okay, so Sarah, what did this teach you about the human condition?
I guess plagiarism's wrong.
He's bad.
But you're not gonna get caught.
So I know. I'm like, fine. We'll give it a go.
So that's what it taught me. What about you?
It taught me that Bradley Cooper will say yes to anything. it taught me, man, I don't know. Like, again, like, I feel like there's so, if you can get enough actors, like, quality actors on board, you can make any movie.
You can make anything. Yeah.
And Bradley Cooper's apparently his childhood friends were the directors and like creators of the movie. So that's why I feel like it even got greenlit because he's like, I can vouch for these guys. We were friends as children. Yeah. I'm like, I want to see if they ever did anything else.
And he stole their story to write.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, another thing I want to mention is apparently this is like a thing that happened to Hemingway, that his wife left like a shitload of his work on a train and it was lost forever. So I think that's why they had a little nod, not so subtle nod to Hemingway. And another thing I think you should know, which is actually hilarious, is this movie got accused of plagiarism based on like a German novel claimed to be about like essentially the exact same thing. It was on the Wikipedia entry. And so I was like, wait a minute.
What?
Who is Dennis Quaid?
You go, Dennis Quaid did it again. So how did he manage that?
I think this was their way of being like,
Yeah. Like if you're going to plagiarize anything, I guess a movie about plagiarism is the best thing to
do. Because
then you're like, we don't plagiarize it. It's about plagiarism. So we get it.
It was commentary.
It was commentary on ourselves. Yeah, what we did.
We're very in tune with what plagiarism is.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay. Wow, thank you so much for watching that movie. I never knew what it was about.
Yep, you are welcome.
And yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you'll join us again for our next step.
Thanks, guys. We love you. We love our listeners. And we promise we'll be more regular.
Yeah, winter is easier to record.
Winter's a lot easier.
Okay, well, thank you, Nameless Produce.
Thank you, producer. We love you.
And have a great weekend, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Est-il trop tard pour me pardonner? Tu sais, ton corps n'est pas seul à me manquer. Oh, ah, est-il trop tard pour me pardonner? Oui, je sais que je t'ai laissé tomber. Sache que je suis vraiment désolée.